Russell Banks was born in Massachusetts and raised in New Hampshire. His father, a plumber, deserted the family when Russell was 12, and Russell helped provide for his mother and three siblings. An excellent student, he won a scholarship to Colgate, but he dropped out in his first year with the intention of joining Castro's insurgent army. He wound up working in a department store in Lakeland, Florida. He lived briefly in Boston, where he began to write short fiction and poetry. He then attended the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Throughout the 1960s, Banks contributed short stories to a variety of literary magazines. He graduated with honors and returned to New Hampshire, where he taught at the University of New Hampshire and at Emerson College in Boston. The 1971 volume of The Best American Short Stories included his fiction. One of his collection of short stories, Searching for Survivors, won an O. Henry Award. Banks ascended to the first rank of American novelists in 1985 with the publication of Continental Drift, a dual point of view work about an oil burner repairman from New Hampshire and a Haitian refugee. The convergence of lives and experiences around violence and tragedy permeates his novels. His most recent novel was 2011's The Lost Memory of Skin. Russell is retired from his position as the Howard G.B. Clark University Professor at Princeton. He lives in upstate New York and Miami. Today we'll chat with him about his new short story collection, A Permanent Member of the Family, his sixth collection of short stories, and the first in almost 15 years. Welcome, Russell, and thanks for stopping by the Book Report.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
We spoke last time about Lost Memory of Skin.
Mm-hmm. Right. That, which is a set in a, although it's not named Miami, it's obviously, anyone who lives here knows that it's very much a Miami story.
Yeah. Right. We're going to talk today about A Permanent Member of the Family, which is a collection of short stories. I've wondered, how did you choose which stories to put in the collection?
Well, actually, I didn't choose from a range of stories. I sat down and wrote them one after the other until I had a book. Usually what I've done in the past is finish a novel, which usually for me takes 3 years, more or less, give or take a year, and then sit down and write a bunch of stories and then go back to writing novels, and then eventually I would go through the stories that I had written and pull together a dozen or so and make a collection out of them. In this case, I didn't. I had written three novels in a row, and I came off that last one, Lost Memory of Skin, in a state of fatigue and despair, and I said, I've got to sit down and write some stories for a while. And I went through my notebooks and clipping files, which I keep, and just pulled out the dozen or so that I thought had story material in them. Then sometimes they were just a little sketch, a paragraph or two that I had written and then forgotten about. Sometimes it was a news clipping. Sometimes it was an article in a magazine or something that had caught my attention. I said, someday I'm going to write a story about that. Well, this was the day. And so I wrote one after the other over a course of a year. And then I realized, I said, this is not a bad book. I think I've got a book and I'm going to go ahead and let it go. And it turned out to be, yes, a permanent member of the family. And of course, as a result of their having been written together in relatively short space of time, they share certain things. They overlap a little bit thematically, and certain obsessions recur. And someone once noticed that, gee, you've got an awful lot of dogs in this book. there are dogs. I didn't realize it, but yeah, dogs keep walking into the room, and they're part of the characters, really. And in a couple of them, they're the main character, and to my surprise. So they have that kind of that quality. I think they feel like they were all written very close to one another. And then the themes of family and the fragility of family and the necessity of family and how the two are often in conflict have to do, of course, with my own life. I mean, this is how I've lived long enough to have seen these dramas unfold, and from the child's point of view, from the adult's point of view, from the husbands, from the wives, from the mothers, from the fathers, etc. And so it was a chance to kind of deal with that material, those experiences, and make something out of them.
Well, one quick question. Do you have a dog?
Well, I actually, over the course of last year, I lost two. I had two dogs, beloved dogs, border collies. And first one died, and then the second died. They were elderly dogs, so it wasn't a tragedy. But it was a sudden hole in my life, and I was very aware of that. And I know that's why the dogs ended up in the stories. I was sort of reincarnating them in a way in fictional form. They do become like members of your family, and these particular dogs were extremely close to my wife and myself.
As a reader of great big, fat, juicy fiction novels, I'm always amazed at the skill that a short story writer has to get a reader to care about a character in such a few number of pages. How do you develop that skill?
Yeah, I'm not sure how one develops it. I think for me, of course, I'm my first and, in a sense, my last reader, too. I'm writing for myself. And so I'm trying to engage my own imagination from the very beginning and my own emotions and thoughts as deeply and quickly and effectively as I can. When I write that first sentence down, which can be almost random, the next sentence has got to interest me. You know, it's got to catch my attention in a meaningful way. And so I think that's all that a writer does anyhow. And then you've got two sentences down, and you try to make a third sentence that'll keep you attentive and engaged and so forth. So, I mean, that's really where all skill, such as we call it, arises, and craft and so forth, I think. Also, you learn over the time that there are certain basic fundamental forms that will allow you to tell a story, and over time you become not necessarily conscious of those. In fact, you're likely to become less conscious of those forms, but they plug in a sense, you know. And one of the things I love about short story writing is that when you begin it, anything is possible. You can begin a story anywhere. But every time you write a sentence, you narrow the options down. It's like a tree, you know, in reverse. You know, you're cutting branches down until you finally get down to just two. And the last couple of paragraphs in a short story are about choosing which of the two endings, you know, are you going to go with. And that's when the smoke starts to come out of one's ears and you're really bearing down. And you have to ask yourself really fundamental kind of questions and say, what do I really believe is true about the world here? Now, is it A or is it B? You're not asking yourself which is a better ending or which is a cuter ending or which ending will the reader like more. You're asking yourself, what do I believe in a very fundamental way? And that's what writing the story is trying to lead you towards, is what's trying to lead the reader towards.
We're speaking with Russell Banks on The Book Report. How often has it happened, or has it ever happened, that you sit down to write a short story and you're well into it and you say, this is turning into a novel. This is going to be my next novel.
It's only happened once.
Which book?
It was Rule of the Bone. And I wanted to write a short story about... I was working in a prison in upstate New York, and I kept coming in contact with these kids that were in their early 20s or so and were doing time, most of it for drugs. And I realized at a certain point they all had, from the age of 14 or so, lived outside normal family life. Either they had, you know, been kicked out of the house, or their parents had abandoned them, or they were living with a grandparent, or they were living with a sibling or something like that. But they weren't living in what we would think of as the nuclear family. And I asked them all, how did they come to live on their own? I mean, just to write an answer to that question. And it turned out they came to live on their own through really stupid little mistakes in life. You know, like I hit a gym teacher, or, you know, or my mother had a guy move in and he didn't like me, or I didn't like him. And from that, he got kicked out of the house. And so that was the story. And then I finished and I said, now I wonder what's going to happen to this kid. He's out there on the streets, you know, and he's homeless. He's a 14-year-old homeless boy. And so I wrote the next, what became then chapter two in Rule of the Bone. And then, well, what really, I wonder what happened to him after that. And then chapter three and so on. And before I knew it, I had the novel.
In the title story, a permanent member of the family, is it autobiographical? And will you share a bit of that story with listeners?
Yeah, I'll confess that that is. It was after a divorce in the 70s, and I had three children, and we were experimenting with joint custody, which was a big deal then, and an experimental kind of arrangement. And I lived in the very close by, and so the kids would go back and forth and everything. And we had a family dog. And there was no way the dog would allow us to have joint custody. The dog is a pack animal, and the dog chose me to take care of her. And so she stayed with me. And in a way, it was great because then the kids would come down, not to see me. They'd come down to see the family dog. And that became a big image in the family, an important one. And then I accidentally drove over the dog. She was very, very old, and she would sleep under the car. And then once that happened, of course, then that kind of broke a shell that was surrounding us during this divorce, because we were all pretending everything was going really well and everybody was happy with the divorce, but of course everybody was miserable with the divorce. And once the dog, then it was Daddy killed the dog.
How do you get back from that?
I know, it was really hard. Well, you're trying to write a story about it many years later is what happened.
In researching for this interview, I read that as a college kid, you were considering joining Castro's Revolution. Uh-huh. What was the attraction and what happened?
Well, I wasn't even a college kid. I was a dropout. I was 18 years old in 1958, the winter of 58-59. And Castro had been presented in the American press then. You may not remember. You're much too young. For a young romantic boy like me who had love of the underdog in place of politics, and it was also a kind of had hit the road more or less in a Jack Kerouacian way. It was a big draw, and so that was how I first got to Miami from New England. I came down here on my way. I didn't know how to get over to Cuba, and I couldn't speak Spanish, but I figured that those were problems I could probably solve eventually on the ground. And then in February, they marched into Havana, and they no longer needed me, and this skinny white kid from New England.
You split your time between upstate New York and Miami. Do you find that you write differently in either location?
You know, I don't. I thought I would. We've been doing it for quite a few years, and I don't notice that. I think that maybe when I was younger, it would have had a bigger impact on me, but I carry both places with me in my mind and heart. When I'm here, I have immediate access to that world, and when I'm there, I have immediate access to this world.
Are you already at work on something new?
Yeah, I am, and I don't really understand it yet. I don't know much about it. I'm pretty deeply into it, so I'm working on that, and I'm working on a couple of screenplays as well, so yeah.
Russell, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great. Thank you very much.